Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Today, let's do some smart thinking around communication. Because everyone I know and every organization I've ever been in has an overwhelming amount of people who complain about communication. Communication, after all, is very personal. It's a very personal process. And most of us are terrible listeners. We hear noises coming out of other people's mouths, but we're thinking of other things. Our response, what we want to have for dinner, if we left the crock pot turned on, did I tell the kids to take out the dog? You know, those other critical things we're always thinking about. One of the most difficult things for each of us is communicating something we need others to understand and quickly. No matter who you are or what you do, you have influence, and that influence makes you a leader. Anytime you can change the direction of others, you are leading and making a difference. And when you lead with intention or by title, communicating accurately is critical. This past week, I found myself in some unique situations where people I was around were jumping to conclusions, creating narratives in their mind, and developing awkward situations as a result. It wasn't about anything I was doing. It was about what other leaders around me were doing, and it was so obvious to me when I was watching the tension rise that people were just operating off of assumptions and making it difficult for each other to communicate. Everyone was on the defense, and I thought, this deserves some time on the podcast and a process. It really got me thinking about how poorly we all listen and how we each dangerously hear and think off of assumptions instead of intentions and facts or purpose. A key consideration for each of us is that if we want to be better communicators, we need to be better empathizers. Better empathizers by seeking to truly understand who is in front of us and what they need in order to be successful. Communication often fails when we try to assume what the people in front of us know and then fill in the gaps. Additionally, another consideration is that other people may simply not care as much as you do about whatever it is you're trying to explain, and as a result, we cycle into more weird self-talk, or worse, you blow right past them because you have the curse of knowledge. Now, before I make a classic communication error here and assume you know what I am talking about, I want to break down two things I just said: self-talk and curse of knowledge. Self-talk is the habit or practice of talking to yourself, either in your mind or out loud. But self-talk can be one of two ways, and unfortunately, many people self-talk themselves into some really weird and dark situations. And what I mean by this is that they are more cow than buffalo in their self-talk, and as a result, they struggle. Cow. Remember, cow is the behavior of slowly trying to walk away from the storm with a pessimistic mindset and a belief that you can avoid the inevitable. A buffalo. A buffalo, of course, is our daily aspiration to charge headlong into whatever we are facing with optimism. But self-talk tends to be something we take for granted, and we can drive ourselves down some really dark corridors. Saying things to ourselves like, I can't do this. I'm ugly. I'm overweight. Nobody likes me. I'm not smart enough. This is impossible. How can anyone believe that I could do this? Self-talking cows diminish their potential by constantly assuming they can't or shouldn't do something. As a result, when a buffalo comes roaming into a cow pen and then they are assuming that everyone else is like them, the negative self-talking cows feel disrespected and then they get defensive. Cows are big creatures and can make a lot of noise, and their self-talk can be a real barrier for you if you assume they're in a different frame of mind than you are, which is why leaders need to speak and communicate with empathy, which we'll explore in a minute. The root of many other assumptions in communication is that the one speaking or writing has what is called the curse of knowledge. The term curse of knowledge was coined in 1989 in the Journal of Political Economy. In an article by economists Colin Cameron, George Lowenstein, and Martin Weber, and they used it to describe a cognitive bias that makes people project their own knowledge and experience of the world onto others. The curse of knowledge is something we all have. We assume everyone around us understands the topics like we do, and we fail to recognize that some of the people we're communicating with have not even stepped onto the bus that we are on. The curse of knowledge is a dangerous thing because it gets us into all types of trouble. Decision makers make choices and communicate some of the information. Although they've been working on this thing for months, they fail to recognize that nobody knows what they're talking about. Other times, we rush through presentations of new information because we've spent so much time with it that we fail to recognize that others have no clue what we're talking about or what we've been through to get to this point. It's called a curse for a reason. You are cursed with a wealth of information and experiences that you usually lack the patience to explain, and you've forgotten the importance of slowing it all down and sharing the journey at a pace that can be consumed by others. As a result of these two behaviors, a boatload of assumptions are taking place, and with it, frustration, disengagement, anger, lack of trust, and most likely, conflict, seen or unseen. As leaders, which is all of us, we need to constantly be operating with empathy. Empathy allows us to rise beyond many of the conflicts that we may be facing as a result of assumptions. Let me tell you what I saw this past week that got me reflecting, researching, and producing this episode. I was asked to support a meeting filled with stakeholders. As I was beginning, I noticed that there were a few of what I like to call mumbling mayhemers. You know, the people who sit off in the dark corner and speak softly, yet loud enough and that everyone can see and hear them speaking so that everyone else is aware of their discontent. As soon as the organization's leader introduced me, I observed the mayhemers begin the darting eyes, you know, where they look around to see who else sees them and their discontent. So, before I went any further, I slipped back into my old teacher mode. I decided, I need to figure this out. So I did a check for understanding and asked everyone to write down why they believed we were in the room together. The leader of the group looked at me like, hey, I just told them why we're here. But I gave them the, it's going to be all right, gesture. I waited. There were about 17 people in the room, and when I asked each person to bring their note up to the front, I simply read them all out loud after I had shuffled them for everyone to hear. You see, we as leaders assume that everyone knows why they're in the room, and I had a sneaking suspicion that the mayhemers were there to be disruptive in a passive-aggressive way. But I was wrong. I was wrong on several accounts. First, they weren't up to no good. Instead, they were in the corner trying to figure out, why are we here? You see, what I read blew all assumptions out of the water. The comments were everything from, I am here because I was told to be, to I have no idea. And only one person of the 17 understood why we were there, and that was the one who organized it. Even though they were all told in the introduction and an email they were there to work with Ted Knightsky to develop processes for improvement, they never understood what that meant. The leader assumed everyone knew what it meant to continuously improve. The audience or stakeholders thought they were either in trouble, needed something fixed, or were there to appease a need for each department to be represented. That sounds very familiar in any workplace. The leader had communicated with the curse of knowledge, and the audience had self-talked themselves into believing that this was some sort of a punishment. We reframed the purpose. I provided background. We explained how it was relevant for them and discussed the consequences if we decided not to do anything. However, what was done next was as critical as the reframing. I ended the meeting. That's right. I said we're done. We were supposed to be there for 3 hours, but after just 40 minutes of processing all that, I said we need everyone to get caught up, flip their mindset, and be ready to go the next time we get together, because we cannot proceed in the current framework. Empathy, after all, is understanding that a bunch of people just went from being clueless to shell-shocked, and there is no purpose of spending hours trying to get people up to speed when they have already convinced themselves that they might not even be the right people in the room. Pretty nuts, I realize, but there is no need to move forward with people who are stuck as a result of a lack of knowledge. I made some dangerous assumptions when I walked in the room. I self-talked into being overly defensive with the mayhemers, and I was mentally prepared for confrontation. None of my biases emerged because we pivoted and we used a process. But I am like anyone else, and if you've experienced as many meetings as I have, either leading them or participating in them or just watching them, you tend to be a little on edge because people never react either as good or bad as you think. But here is a process for you when you are working with others or trying to communicate to those around you. I call it two whys, and a couple of whats. When trying to communicate to those you serve, it's critical to frame it with empathy. Empathy is putting yourself in their position and trying to understand why they are where they are at. What is critical is being able to fill in as much of the narrative as possible so that you can inform their self-talk and avoid operating with the curse of knowledge. You would never hand a switchblade knife to a one-year-old and assume that she was born with the knowledge to understand all of the consequences of pressing the button. So why would you communicate in a manner that assumes everyone knows all of the parts that you are trying to get across? Yet, we do it all the time. So, two whys and a couple of whats. These are questions that you answer as well as ask, and you do so in short, simple, elegant little bullet points. You present them, you share them, preferably in advance, and then you review them when everyone is together. No one reads paragraphs of information, so don't assume everyone is going to read all of your beautifully typed background knowledge emails. It's just not going to happen. So let's look at a system here, two whys and a couple of whats. The first why is background. Background. Why is this important to us? This why would address the history and background that got us here. This is the one area where we need to explain the journey. Who has been a part of the decision or the change? Where it comes from? Is it financial, learning, law, etc.? It should be simple and clearly articulate all the background. What was read, researched, etc. The second why is the purpose. Why are we doing this? This gives the relevance to your followers, even students. Here is where we make all the connections. We are doing this to meet a specific need, to improve, to address a gap, to provide a better service, to increase capacity, to save more lives, to increase reading knowledge, to reduce, whatever it is. You need to clearly identify the purpose. Without purpose, there is no motivation or ability for those you serve to find relevance within their lives to attach to. I can get really excited about stuff, and I lead with great enthusiasm. But that fades when I leave the room, and if people don't understand what the heck just happened or their role or their purpose is, well, they're just going to get frustrated and you'll assume they have ownership. And guess what? They don't. Background, purpose. Those are the two whys. And now the first what. What do I or you need to do in order for us to move forward? Once people understand where this is coming from and why they need to be engaged, the next thing they want to know is, what do I need to do? Or what do I get out of this? We need to be upfront, explain, and demonstrate the commitments. Otherwise, the silent self-talk gets so loud within the individuals that they cannot even hear themselves think, let alone the train blowing right through the meeting. Here is the deal. People care deeply about many things, but the most important thing is being able to predict their future. It is really unsettling when you don't know what it is and what's happening. And then when the leader assumes that everyone else cares, well, that leader is seen as an idiot. Communicating with empathy also means communicating with clear intentions, identifying clear lines of sight, and making sure people know their role. So the last what. What do you need to know, do, and be able to produce? Pretty clear and simple. In addition, there's something called WIFM. WIFM stands for What's In It For Me. And this is what we are identifying. People also want to know what they get out of what they give. How will their life change? What do they need to do in order to prepare? And what commitments or changes will they need to make as a result of this newness? Answer this, and you'll be way ahead of others. Background, purpose, behavior, and the last area to address, consequences. What are the consequences of inaction? I want you to think about this for a second. So many times we're sitting in meetings and people are talking about, it's going to be great when we do this, and if we launch this, and if we just do this one thing, it'll all be fine. But we never talk about, if we don't do this, this is what will happen. Think about this for a second. So if you were in a meeting and someone started out giving you a brief on the background, then explaining the purpose of what we were doing, and followed that up with a description of what you would need to do, the very next thought in your own head is, oh yeah, and what if I choose to do nothing? So, let's not assume people all have good intentions or are motivated with the enthusiasm to do new things like you are. Let's make certain they know the background, the purpose, the impact, and the consequences. Let's run this out with how I've used it at home. You see, everything I've ever discussed with you or I've been trained around, I master in my house before I try to apply it professionally. So, at the beginning of this school year, my son Charlie went off to college. and I asked him to make sure that he was frequently checking the oil in the car we let him take to college. Let. After a few weeks, I went and checked the oil when he had come home. You know, the paranoid dad. When I did, it needed oil. So I asked Charlie, "Have you checked the oil lately?" And I got that look from your kid when you can tell they're thinking about how to answer. Do I try to lie through this, or do I just tell the truth? Well, he told the truth, and our conversation had two whys and a couple of whats. And here's how it went. "Charlie, this is an older car, and it burns oil. As a result, we need to check it frequently." That's the background. "Charlie, oil in the engine is used to lubricate the inner workings, and if the oil is full, the engine can operate the way it is intended, and you get good fuel usage, and you won't break down on the highway or far away from home. It's important. That's the purpose. If the car is well maintained, it will last through college, and then it's yours. This is the WIFM, or what it means to you. However, if you do not check the oil, and under your care, the engine seizes up because you failed to monitor it, you will owe me and your mother thousands of dollars for intentionally neglecting your obligation. That is the consequences." I realize this sounds super simple, but it changed his behavior. He saw all four areas, two whys and a couple of whats. Sometime I'll share with you how I told Gracie when she was little that if she didn't frequently change the garbage in the kitchen, we'd all die of the plague. Anyways, all conflict can be avoided, or at least minimized, if we follow a process, if we lead with empathy, and if we avoid making assumptions in our leadership. Each time you are working with or for others, ask two whys and a couple of whats as you prepare, and then share the two whys and a couple of whats. This helps you avoid positioning yourself to die with the curse of knowledge, die of frustration because no one else seems to get it, or be drowned out by the self-talk of those you serve. So let's do some smart thinking. Describe how you can avoid communicating with assumptions. List how you can apply two whys and a couple of whats. Describe your process for avoiding the frustrations of assumptions. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Hey, as always, thank you for listening, and please share and rate this episode on your social media platform. Please remember to follow us on Twitter and Facebook, because what I talked about today will be created in a process tool, and we will post it on social media platforms as well as in the TH3 on Thursday this week. Lastly, take some time to do some smart thinking this week and review what you just learned or were reminded of. All frustrations we face when working with others are our responsibility. You can't expect others to change or the culture to grow if you are not creating the conditions for that to happen. When you work with kids or adults, you have to flip assumptions on their head. You need to assume they don't understand where this is coming from. You have to assume they don't see the relevance. You have to assume you're blinded by knowledge. And you need to assume that you'll have to repeat a lot of whatever it is you're communicating on a working basis moving forward. I realize this sounds crazy and a little condescending, as if the other people are totally clueless, but you need to remember that everyone self-talks while you are talking, and everyone is cursed with their own knowledge, experiences, and hurdles. Stop setting yourself up with the assumptions that everyone around you is apathetic and doesn't care, and optimistically assume like crazy. Assume that they want to be better. Assume that you'll have to keep shifting. You will have to keep working and engaging those around you with a process. See to it this week that you shift assumptions by providing two whys and a couple of whats, or else you know what happens when you assume. I know many of you have been waiting for this. It makes an assumption out of you and me.